You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of October 31st, 2013. My name is Atta Dizdar, and joining me once again is Jeremy Chapman. Jeremy, you know we're recording this on Halloween. Are you planning on going to any Halloween parties?
I mean, I usually don't divulge my partying plans. No, I'm kidding. not tonight. Well, not a Halloween party of sorts. I'm sort of taking it easy. It's a really rainy day where I am in Indiana. It's just been pouring rain all day, so I thought the perfect Halloween party would involve a six pack of Founders Porter and a pizza and a good friend. So we're I think after the podcast we're just gonna chill out. I'm afraid to say. Do you have any crazy plans over there in the DC area?
None, unfortunately. I guess I'll have to deal with a bunch of trick or treaters tonight. I mean,
well, all the parties were last weekend too.
Yeah, I mean, I guess all the fun stuff was last weekend, but
I don't know. I was supposed to be in Miami Beach by now, but right. Work pushed that off like a little bit.
All right, then, so let's head off the whole Halloween stuff. Let's move into the Turkish Super League. It's week 9, our review of week 9 of the Turkish Super League. Let's start off with Friday and Saturday results. Friday's results saw Fenerbahce at home beating Gaziantepspor 3-1 and Sivasspor at home beating Kayseri Erciyesspor 2-0. Saturday's results saw Karabükspor and Antalyaspor play to a 1-1 draw. Elazığspor at home loses to Gençlerbirliği 2-1, and Akhisar Belediyespor and Beşiktaş playing to a 3-3 draw. I guess we'll start off with Friday first. It doesn't really look so good for Kayseri Erciyesspor. Atif Şeşu scoring the goals for Sivasspor in the 20th and 75th minute, and Bjorn Flemings receives a direct red card in the 85th minute there. And really, I'm thinking, you know, he was on the sidelines, you know, I guess he was being treated, and then he was said to come in, but for some weird reason, he gets a red card, and that's actually his third red card in the 7 games that he's played. You know, Erciyesspor haven't won since week 4 when they beat Akhisar Belediyespor 1-0, and in the Fenerbahçe-Gaziantepspor match, Manuel Emenike with 2 goals there, along with a Musa So goal, Simmer Stilic with Gaziantepspor's only goal in the 75th minute. Of course, there was some questions over whether Emenike's first goal was offside or not. You know, we'll discuss that a little bit later. But I guess a quick review of Friday, you know, I just don't seem to see how Kayseri Erciyesspor can really recover at this point. I mean, there seems to be a lot of indiscipline within that team, especially with Flemings. And, you know, what we saw with Flemings last season when he was on loan from Bruges at Gençlerbirliği, I mean, I believe he scored like 4 goals in his Turkish Super League debut. We were talking about like how good of a forward he is. He was called the Gladiator when he was playing in Gençlerbirliği. But I don't know. It just seems as though there's a lot of indiscipline there. Now, as for the Fenerbahce match, it just seems to be more ho-hum. But Emenike's first goal, League TV was disputing whether it was an offside or not. But I think in that situation, considering him and Alper Potuk were behind the outfield defenders and there was only the goalkeeper to beat, in that situation, it's where the ball was placed, and, well, Emenike just slightly behind the ball. I mean, I guess it was just mostly, if you draw a line where the ball was in that situation, considering both of the attackers were behind the outfield players and only had the goalkeeper to beat in the penalty area, it was very slightly onside, so the goal stood. And I actually had to go to Wikipedia to look that up, but for Fenerbahce, it's ho-hum. For Sivasspor, a good win for them, but for Kayseri Erciyesspor, to me, doesn't really look too good for them.
Yeah, you know, I'd put in a word for Kayseri Erciyesspor, though, because they did have a goal wrongfully discounted. It would have been the opening goal of the match. It was called offside, but it was just a bad call. I guess it was close, but by soccer or football standards, it really wasn't that close. Like, most sideline refs would have gotten that right. So they had an opening goal discounted. You know, that could have changed things for them. Kayseri Erciyes haven't scored on the road since week 3. And so that was, you know, just some really, I guess, bad luck for them. I thought Kayseri Erciyes posed a threat by how the fact they haven't been able to get a result lately. I thought they still definitely posed a threat to Sivasspor. But no surprise in the end with the 2-0 victory for Sivas. And Fenerbahce, you said the Emenike goal looked offside. I mean, I even thought Musa So's goal looked a little bit offside too. I'd probably have to see that again. I wasn't convinced after one replay, but that was definitely close. And maybe he was onside, but I still raised a couple of eyebrows at that one. And I think Fenerbahce, they really seemed to dismantle the Gaziantepspor defense. It was just like classic football. You know, they had a lot of really good passing at the top of the box, and Gaziantepspor just wasn't prepared to defend against that kind of passing. So Fenerbahce deserved the win, but they really, really didn't seem invincible in this game, you know, and they might have gotten lucky with at least one of the goals, not getting called offside there. So I think they'll obviously be happy with a 3-1 victory at home, but they didn't look as invincible sort of as you kind of expect them to, or that kind of thing.
I guess you mean to say they weren't as convincing.
Yeah, and I was also just trying to point out that Gaziantepspor, they came close a lot of times. They had a lot of good runs. You know, it just wasn't, just based on their standings in the league, you'd think that Fenerbahce would, you know, completely destroy Gaziantepspor, and the scoreline may even suggest that happened, but for me it was closer than the score suggested.
Okay, so let's review Saturday. So Lamana Lualua scored the goal for Karabükspor in the 58th minute in their match against Antalyaspor, but Uğur Uçar scoring an own goal in the 76th minute to level the score for Antalyaspor. As for the Gençler Birliği-Elazığspor match in Elazığ, Mehmet Özdilek made his debut as Gençler Birliği manager, and he won his first game. Onur Ayık scoring the only goal for Elazığspor in the 42nd minute. But Sedat Bayrak and Bogdan Stanku in the 45th and 85th minutes, respectively, scoring the goals for Gençler Birliği as they win for the first time since week 2 when they beat Akhisar Belediyespor 3-0. Now, speaking of Akhisar Belediyespor, they played Beşiktaş in perhaps the game of the week, really. I mean, it just seemed as though that it was a very close game between both Akhisar and Beşiktaş. Beşiktaş actually had to come back from a 3-1 deficit in order to draw the match. And Özhan Özyakup returned to the Beşiktaş lineup for the first time in 4 weeks. You know, he recovered from his injury. Olcay Şahan got the scoring started in the 18th minute there, but Bruno Mazenga with 2 goals and Bilal Kısa scoring the goals in the first half. The 24th, 35th, and 38th minutes, respectively. Kısa scored in the 38th minute. But Özhan Özyakup scoring in the 40th minute to kind of start the comeback. And Hugo Almeida in the second half in the 55th minute, leveling the score for Beşiktaş. And I guess we're really going to be talking about that game for Saturday. But it was a really, really great game. You know, my opinions on the Gençler Birliği match, I guess maybe you could say that's new coach smell, but Gençler Birliği, at least they got a win. We'll get to the standings in a moment, but they have gotten out of the relegation zone. But I guess most of the discussion will have to focus on the Akhisar Beşiktaş match. It was a great game.
Yeah, you know, Saturday worked out really well as far as things that I was predicting. One thing I said last week was that Gençler, if they can get a road victory against the weak and struggling Elazığspor, could actually jump out of the relegation zone, which, like you said, they did. And then the other thing, I did predict that Akhisar and Beşiktaş would end up in a draw, although I thought it was going to be scoreless. I thought it was going to be a defensive battle, but it ended up being more of an offensive battle there. But, you know, I'd say a quick thing about the Karabükspor match. I mean, you know, they got their goal off a PK. It was like a handball in the box, and that was kind of a weak call. I felt like it sort of hit the defender's hip more than his arm, but they've got to score anyway. They can these days, Karabükspor. You know, they only have 9 points on the season after 9 matches. And then Gench Larrabee, a couple of interesting things I found about this match. But this is the first time that Gench Lair actually scored a goal on the road, and two goals at that to win the game. You know, I don't know why the Genshler keeper Ramazan didn't come out to stop El Azizpor's only goal. It just seemed kind of like a heavy pass to Onur, but it seemed like a preventable goal, although it was a good strike in the end. But Genshler coming back, like you mentioned, so that was really good stuff to see from them. I mean, you know, it's 9 games into the season and they finally score on the road. Okay, it's a bit late, but it's never too late to get started on that. And this was El Azizpor's second home game in a row, and yet they're still on a 5-game skid there. So it'll be interesting to see if Gench Larrabee can continue to perform a little bit and maybe put a little bit of a buffer between them and the relegation zone. But yeah, like you say, yeah, match of the week was probably Akhisar Belediye and Beşiktaş. I mean, you know, we mentioned last week the best home team against the best away team, and I thought this was a really good match. You know, I found out after the game that up until this game, Beşiktaş had won every single game in which they had scored at least one goal. They were 5-0-0 with 4 clean sheets in matches which they scored at least a goal before this. And in this case, they didn't get the win, but they still got a point out of it. I'd say they're lucky because Akhisar Belediye, I mean, they've been an absolutely unstoppable force when playing at home in Manisa. So really great stuff there. It's kind of nice because I was looking forward to that match. I caught a bunch of it, and it was, you know, it lived up to my expectation.
All right, then, so let's move on to Sunday and Monday's results. Sunday's results saw Eskişehirspor at home beat Rizespor 4-1. Konyaspor loses to Bursaspor at home 1-0. And Kayserispor loses at home to Galatasaray 4-2. And in Monday's only match, Kasımpaşa at home beats Trabzonspor 3-2. I know you got a lot of things to discuss about the Kasımpaşa Trabzonspor match, but let's at least go over Sunday's matches first. Eskişehirspor really whooping up on Rizespor. Cristobal Jorquera, Erman Kılıç, Erkan Zengin, and Alfred Ndiaye with the goals there. Leonard Kweke scoring the only goal for Rizespor in the 69th minute after a bicycle kick. It was a really nice goal, by the way. You know, Eskişehirspor winning 4 out of their last 5 games, and I believe you had mentioned that they have had to play arguably the toughest schedule so far this season. And Rizespor, yeah, they're on a skid, 4 league match winless streak, and well, it wasn't that great of a week for Rizespor, and we'll get to that in a moment when we talk about the Turkish Cup third round a little bit. And for Bursaspor, you know, a 1-0 win. Ferhat Kiraz with the only goal for Bursaspor there. Bursaspor on a 4-match unbeaten streak in the league. And for Galatasaray, it was kind of scary when it came down to the first half. It was 2-2 at halftime. Wesley Sneijder and Aurelien Çeçiu scoring the goals for Galatasaray in the first half. But Kayserispor's goals came via Pablo Moshe with a penalty. And Zsa in the 45th minute. I guess it was one of the weirdest goals I've ever seen from Zsa. But Burak Yılmaz and Didier Drogba in the second half clinching the win for Galatasaray there. And Kayserispor has only won 2 points from the last 8 weeks, so that's a bit of a skid there for Kayserispor. I believe when we get to the standings, they are right at the bottom of the table. But, 2 points from the last 8 weeks against a Galatasaray team that's seeming to be coming together under Roberto Mancini. And he did happen to wear a red and yellow scarf, by the way. I didn't know if you noticed that, but Eskişehirspor and Rizespor, Eskişehirspor looking really, really good. And, you know, you had talked about how Rizespor doesn't seem to do well against teams in the top half of the table, and we saw that a little bit with this game. You know, the Bursaspor match, you know, I guess it was kind of dull to an extent, but, you know, the two matches I wanted to talk about from Sunday was Eskişehirspor really putting a whooping on Rizespor, but I think, like you said, you know, Rizespor has not done very well against teams in the top half of the table, and it seems as though that, you know, with their recent 4-match winless skid, they're kind of fading away, even though they had a really great start to the season.
That's definitely true. And, you know, granted, this was a road game for Rizespor. And I think the main point I think I want to drive home in this week's edition of Turkish Football Weekly is going to be Eskişehirspor is the most underrated team in the league right now, I think. I think the highlight of this game is more about Eskişehirspor. In their 9 matches that they've played now, I guess 7 of them were against teams which now occupy the top half of the table. And of course, Eskişehirspor is one of them. So they've played basically 7 of the 8 other teams in the top half of the table. I mean, they've had an insanely difficult schedule. They've only had one easy match, and that was against Elazığspor, and they took care of them without a hitch. But Eskişehirspor, they've had an incredibly tough schedule. I would expect similar performances like this 4-1 victory against Rizespor. Until we get to the mid-season break, I really think they're going to be one of those teams that we're talking about, you know, which European competition they end up going to, assuming that they can maintain form. But just looking at the league table, you wouldn't really know it. But I'm expecting great things from SS, as they're belovedly called. And I noticed something kind of weird about them. This was the first time this season that they didn't score either 2 goals or 0 goals. They always either get a couple of goals or they get shut out. But here they finally came up with 4. So I think we're about to see Eskişehirspor start to make a meal of most of the rest of the league. Even more than they have. And Bursaspor getting that 1-0 win, they're becoming the new shutout streak team. When we get to talking about Trabzonspor, the Monday match, Trabzonspor's shutout streak ended, and now Bursaspor's the team to watch. After their victory, they've shut out their opponents for 433 regular time minutes. Of course, they're going to have to face a really tough match this weekend, so you might expect that shutout streak to end, but at least they're on good form. Granted, they haven't played the toughest teams lately, but it still counts in my book. And yeah, big win for Galatasaray in Kayseri. Kayserispor, as you mentioned, they really are not looking good now. And I crunched the numbers on them too, and they've actually had one of the easier matchup schedules so far this season, and yet they find themselves dead last in the league. The city of Kayseri cannot be having a good time right now, given that their only 2 teams are occupying the last 2 spots in the league. But I think we'll probably see some adjustments from Kayserispor soon, because they're going to need something. Granted, this was Galatasaray, so maybe they can forgive themselves the loss there. But yeah, you suggested that I wanted to talk a lot about Kasımpaşa and Trabzonspor. I don't really. I saw the last half of this game, and it just frustrated the crap out of me. I mean,
yeah, and
why did you tell the good fans what happened? But I don't really want to talk about it. The reffing was just egregious.
Okay. Well, Kasımpaşa is on a 3-match winning streak. They've not had a draw so far this season. And Trabzonspor, their shutout streak ends after 470 minutes. Kerem Sheraş, Adem Büyük, and Oscar Scarioni scoring the goals for Kasımpaşa there. Trabzonspor scoring through Paulo Henrique and Oğuzhan Edin. And there were 2 things that did stand out to me in this game, and I think we're going to have to try and wrap up our review because we're kind of going a little bit lengthy here. The penalty appeal by Oğuzhan Edin, you know, I did happen to see that replay. I watched it a couple times, but it seemed as though Andreas Isaksson, the Kasımpaşa goalkeeper, was more or less going for the ball instead of the guy. And even Marcus Merrick of League TV, you know, I was looking up the League TV app on my iPad and, you know, watching his reaction to it, and he said, that's not a penalty within a million years. And then Aykut Demir, you know, I'm going to have to add him to my list of tools, because he sees 2 yellow cards within the span of a minute, and, you know, he gets a yellow card, okay, well, he might not agree with it, you know, just say a couple things to the referee and just go. But he just kept arguing with the guy, and I was surprised the referee even gave him another yellow card for just keeping on talking, because we know about how much Turkish players like arguing with referees, so...
Yeah, but to his credit, I mean, that first yellow card was bullshit. I could understand why he was really frustrated, and it takes a certain kind of, you know, self-control or whatever, self-restraint to not argue with the ref a whole lot. The ref just seemed to want to give him the yellow cards. I don't know. I can kind of see it from Aykut Demir's perspective. That was, like, really frustrating. It wasn't even a foul, and it gets a yellow card, and then he argues it and gets another. You just got to not argue and take a couple of breaths, but, you know, it's tough to do sometimes. This whole game just fell apart the last 15 minutes, especially after he got ejected.
All right, I think we'll end our review there. Let's get to the standings. After 9 weeks, Fenerbahce leading the league with 22 points. Kasımpaşa in second with 18. Beşiktaş in third with 17. Three teams with 16 points. Eskişehirspor, Galatasaray, and Sivasspor. Eskişehirspor in fourth, Galatasaray fifth, Sivasspor sixth because of the goal differential. So the top six, other than Fenerbahce with a four-point cushion, very tight within the top six. And, of course, with four teams with 14 points, Akhisar Belediyespor, Rizespor, Bursaspor, and Trabzonspor there. So, you know, a couple wins by some of these teams. And, you know, we could see some mixing at the midpoint of the table here. But, you know, for Fenerbahce, it's ho-hum. But are we really surprised to see Kasımpaşa up there in terms of second place so far? Because they've actually been a pretty good team over the last 9 weeks. And early days has now ended. This is now we're getting into the nitty-gritty of the season, you know, the mid-season grind. So I'm wondering if Kasımpaşa and Eskişehirspor can keep up the form that we've been seeing from them so far. Obviously, Eskişehirspor being in fourth, but, you know, we've kind of praised them earlier on in the podcast, you know, the way they've been playing. So we'll have to see what happens from here on in, at least with the mid-season grind, as we drive towards the winter break.
On the one hand, I am surprised to see Kasımpaşa that far up there, but if you look at who their wins have come against, Kayserispor, Konyaspor, Elazığspor, Gençlerbirliği, they haven't really found a result against a tough team. You know, they've lost to Fenerbahçe, lost Eskişehirspor, so I think they'll be a team to watch to see if they can, you know, maintain form, maintain their spot up there in second place. But like you say, it's really close up there too. So I think that now is when it's getting kind of exciting because we're far enough in that we sort of feel like we know what to expect, but there's still a lot of mixing. I like the way you put that. That can go on in the middle and toward the top of the table.
Right, and looking at the bottom, Kayserispor dead last with 5 points. Kayser Erzurumspor with 6 points. Elazığspor with 7 points in 16th, but they have a far worse goal differential than Gençlerbirliği. Gençlerbirliği in 15th with the same amount of points as Elazığspor, but with a -4 differential compared to Elazığspor's -11. And like you were saying with the Kasımpaşa, if I want to go back to that a little bit, you know, at least they're getting 3 points against teams that they should be beating. And then when they get to, you know, the tougher teams, perhaps a draw would be enough for them in terms of surviving those sorts of teams. But, you know, looking at the bottom, both of the Kayseri teams, I would assume that Fuat Çapa and Robert Prochniecki, their managerial seats are, you know, getting really, really hot right now in terms of, you know, their job security. Especially for Çapa, because I would have thought that, you know, considering what he did with Gençlerbirliği last season, you know, maybe he would have done a lot better with Erciyesspor, but, you know, and Bjorn Flemings has disappointed me so far. That's just sad to see. You know, I would have thought both Kayseri teams would have done better at this point.
Yeah, I definitely agree there. And I thought the rivalry would kind of fuel the fans from both sides. You know, they've got a beautiful, relatively new stadium there in Kayseri. You know, in the past, they've had a lot of good fan passion. But, you know, what's it going to do for the football economy of Kayseri if both their teams are facing relegation? I mean, you know, a win and a draw could kind of ease their woes for a little bit, for a couple of weeks, but that's going to be a situation to watch for sure.
All right, so let's move on to the Week 10 schedule. We're already into November, believe it or not. Friday, November 1st, we'll see Galatasaray face Konyaspor in the Türk Telekom Arena. Saturday, we'll see two matches as Bursaspor hosts Fenerbahce and Kayseri Erciyesspor hosts Kasımpaşa. Sunday's matches see Trabzonspor hosting Elazığspor, Beşiktaş hosting Karabükspor, and Rizespor hosting Akhisar Belediyespor. Monday we'll see Gaziantepspor hosting Sivasspor, Gençlerbirliği hosting Eskişehirspor, and Antalyaspor hosting Kayserispor. You know, we were talking about Kasımpaşa. I mean, this is a game they really should win because Erciyesspor really isn't that good. You know, we were talking about how they're second to last in the table. But Bursaspor versus Fenerbahce, I mean, that should be interesting. Like you said, you know, with Bursaspor's current shutout streak, you know, they haven't given up a goal in
four straight matches is really what it is. They're on a three-game win streak. They've shut out their team, their opponent, four straight matches. And this is going to be their first home game since they got that first home win a couple of weeks back. So that having been said, it's all been against fairly weak teams. These recent wins, this will really pose a challenge for them, but I'm sure the fans will come out for that one. This whole week, or this whole weekend, I should say, it just seems to me like a lot of most of these matchups you can kind of predict. I mean, Galatasaray, they're undefeated at home and they're playing Konyaspor, who are 0-1-3 on the road. I mean, Galatasaray, I mean, they should, and I expect they fully will, just make a meal of Konyaspor. Bursa Fenerbahce will be interesting to see, just because, like, Fenerbahce seem to be unstoppable, and we're all kind of watching for the team that's going to be able to stop them. And then Kayseri and Kasımpaşa, you mentioned, that's kind of a mismatch. It's the biggest mismatch-up match of the week. There's a 12-point difference between the number of points these teams have right now in the league. So even though it's a road game for Kasımpaşa, that's sort of their specialty. It's going to be a bloodbath in Kayseri, really.
Yeah, I mean, and you mean Kayseri Erciyesspor, you know.
That's true. I do mean Kayseri Erciyesspor in this case. And you look at Sunday's game, like Trabzonspor playing Elazığspor. Elazığ are giving up an average of 3 goals per road game to their opponents. And Trabzonspor has only allowed 1 goal at home all season. And that was in a match which they ended up winning anyway. So I guess what I'm saying, on the one hand, these games seem super predictable. But on the other hand, I guess there's an opportunity for some massive upsets. For me, the Rizespor Akhisar Belediyespor match will be really interesting. These two teams are even on points. This game's happening on Sunday. Akhisar Belediyespor, they're that team that's just performed so well at home, and they can seem to beat everybody. But on the road, they really have almost no success at all. And Rizespor, they've been struggling a bit lately. You know, will Akhisar take advantage of Rizespor's recent struggles, or will Rizespor bounce back and take advantage of Akhisar's sort of Achilles heel, which is that they when they're not played in Manisa, they can't seem to get anything to go their way. And Gençlerbirliği and Eskişehirspor, I love Gençlerbirliği. I wish them the best. But like I said, Eskişehirspor, they're the team that I've got my eye on right now, because, like I say, they're super underrated. I think they're just going to destroy Gençlerbirliği. I don't know. I hope it doesn't come across as being, you know, cynical or whatever. I feel like I know what's going to happen in all these games, because it's Turkish football. So there's just bound to be a bunch of upsets or a bunch of surprises or crazy red cards or even worse. So yeah.
I guess we'll end this segment of Turkish Football Weekly. Although I did want to mention one quick thing. Remember what I said a few weeks ago about Galatasaray and games played on Friday, and they play games on Friday?
Oh yeah. What was that stat that they,
I think I can't remember, but yeah, they don't tend to do well on when they play on Fridays. You know, I mentioned that a few weeks ago.
Yeah, that's right. If they can break the curse, they'll do it against Konyaspor, I think.
I really don't rate Konyaspor against them, especially with Konya being the road team. So that's going to do it for this segment of Turkish Football Weekly. Coming up, we're going to talk about some news. We'll talk a little bit about the Turkish Cup third round because, well, Rizespor didn't really have a good week. So stay tuned. And welcome back to Turkish Football Weekly. I just wanted to reiterate my point about Galatasaray playing on Fridays. It was only back in September I did happen to mention that within the last two seasons, Galatasaray have played 11 matches on Fridays, but they've only won 3 times. So there's a bit of a Friday jinx with Galatasaray. But I guess, really, to sum it up, I don't think they're going to have much trouble with Konyaspor, though.
You Turks are so superstitious sometimes, but that is an interesting statistic. I'll give you that.
Yeah. So let's move on to the Turkish Cup third round. I mean, there's really not much to discuss. We haven't really gotten into the nitty-gritty of that. You know, some Super League teams, you know, they had a little bit of trouble advancing, and Rizespor wasn't a good week for them as they lose to second division outfit Tarsus İdman Yurdu in a penalty shootout. Tarsus İmamoğlu is actually in the third tier of Turkish football. And PTT First Division outfit Gaziantep Büyükşehir Belediyespor was in a shootout with Altınordu, who are in the TFF Third Division, or the fourth tier, and won 6-5. So I guess really nobody's really interested until like the major teams are coming in. But, you know, Rizespor, it wasn't a good week for them.
Yeah, and a lot of these games were pretty close. There were a lot of really near upsets. You know, Rizespor was just the only team that didn't escape from being totally upset. You know, I usually don't have nice things to say about the Turkish Cup, but I thought that maybe as a DC United fan, you might appreciate that, that like, you know, a weaker club can find some glory that way. Especially I have my eye, you know, on Super League teams because, you know, well, a Super League team is probably going to win the cup, and it could be their ticket to Europe that they otherwise might not be able to get. So right now, every Super League team is still in the competition except for Çaykur Rizespor.
Very interesting there. So we'll see what happens in the fourth round. But let's get to some news going around Turkish football. We have another coaching casualty to report on, as Eluspor manager Trond Soliad has resigned a day after his team lost to Gençler Birliği. Replacing him will be former Turkish national team assistant coach Okan Buruk. Buruk had previously played for Galatasaray and Inter Milan. In their extraordinary congress, Kayserispor have re-elected Recep Mamur as their chairman after he had resigned last month. Former general manager Süleyman Hurma has also indicated that he will return to his position, and by the time you listen to this podcast, he probably will have returned there. Rizespor, you know, it wasn't a good week for them in terms of the league and the cup. Well, it's also not good for them on the injury front as well, as Leonard Kueke is going to be out for at least a month with a groin strain. Now, I had briefly mentioned Kayseri Erciyesspor's, you know, indiscipline during the league review. Well, they have demoted Bjorn Fleming, Sinan Kalaoğlu, Ziri Hamar, Ekrem Ekşioğlu, and Erhan Güven to the reserves for an indefinite period due to disciplinary reasons. Fleming has been reportedly fined €90,000 by the club. Turkish national team will play two friendlies against Northern Ireland on November 15th and Belarus on November 19th. Trabzonspor have announced that they have a net debt of 173 million Turkish lira. That's an approximate number. That's approximately 63 million euros or $87 million. And Aziz Yıldırım has announced his candidacy for the Fenerbahçe chairman post to be contested in an extraordinary congress this coming weekend. And also running for the post is former Turkish Football Federation chairman Mehmet Ali Aydınlar, who announced his candidacy during the international weekend a few weeks ago. So, interesting news there. You know, Trond Soliad, I guess, well, we were expecting a coaching change at Eluspor considering how dire the situation for Eluspor really is. But, you know, Okan Buruk, that's a bit of an interesting coaching appointment. I really don't think he's going to do much for Elazığspor. I don't think he's really going to last there. And Kayseri Erciyesspor, you know, I guess this is pretty much a radical decision, you know, demoting five players from the A squad. You know, Bjorn Fleming, I talked about it earlier. I mean, in seven appearances, he's had three red cards. So it just seems as though, like, you know, what's going on with Erciyesspor? You know, you'd think that it would be doing a little bit better considering Fleming was really, really good for Gençler Birliği when he was on loan from Club Brugge last season. And, well, it was the second half of last season.
Yeah, so both of these teams you've just mentioned are actually going to play each other in 2 weeks. Eluspor and Kayseri Erciyesspor. Okan Buruk really has his work cut out for him this weekend against Trabzonspor. But if they get a point out of that, that'll be huge, even if they get a goal. But then the following week, they'll play in Kayseri Erciyesspor. It'll be interesting to see if all the adjustments happening at Kayseri Erciyesspor have any effect. And if they do, that'll be kind of a clash of the bottom dwellers, I guess. Although Eluspor is not exactly at the bottom of the table, but you got two teams which are really struggling for making some good news, basically.
Right. I guess we should spend some time on Aziz Yıldırım and Mehmet Ali Aydınlar. You know, I've been watching some of the pundit shows. Actually, it's mostly Telegol, you know, that pundit show. And let me put it this way. Turkish pundit shows, you know, it's just basically talking heads. I remember, like, talking with a Peruvian friend of mine. It's like, oh, you guys got this too? It's like, yeah. Yeah, we got this. Yeah, they have this in Peru. They talk a lot of BS. So it's like, oh, okay, so it's not just limited to Turkey then. Okay, but the swords have been unsheathed. You know, Yıldırım and Aydınlar are just basically like two politicians just going at it, you know, with the war of words and things like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens in that extraordinary congress. this coming weekend to see who wins, you know. I mean, there's been rumors going around that Aziz Yıldırım is going to get banned by UEFA, but that was a Bugün newspaper, and you know, I really don't think that they're really much of a credible newspaper unless something is in Hürriyet or Milliyet, you know, the major newspapers. I kind of think of, like, the other papers as just some sort of, you know, rumor mongering, but, you know, Hürriyet and Milliyet are probably the two best papers in Turkey. But, yeah, I mean, Yıldırım and Aydınlar, they're basically button heads at this point, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in that Congress for Fenerbahçe and see who wins the chairmanship.
As a Fenerbahce fan, who are you hoping does, or do you have an opinion on that, or are you just kind of wait and see?
You know, my opinion on that is simply this. I mean, okay, I've kind of built up a hatred for Aziz Yıldırım since 2008, but with the whole thing about the, you know, the match fixing case and, you know, my doubts as to the legitimacy of that case, and I covered that ad nauseum when it was happening, you know, with our friend Gareth Llewellyn Stevens back then. But it's kind of made me a little sympathetic towards Aziz Yıldırım. But comparing him with Mehmet Ali Aydınlar, when Aydınlar was running the Turkish Football Federation, it just seemed as though he was dragging his feet and just couldn't come to a decision on really anything. So in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, well, if Aydınlar couldn't run the Turkish Football Federation very well, what makes him think he's going to run this club?
Yeah, I don't think people really run for these things based on an objective opinion of what they think they're going to be able to do. But I guess in some sense, they feel like they can. So what, do you think it's just bad or not great news either way?
Well, there are actually four candidates for the club chairmanship. But really, the two major ones that have been reported on the news has been Yıldırım and Aydınlar. But I mean, I guess maybe we're going to have a situation where Yıldırım does get reelected, and maybe it's one of those things where it's the devil that you already know instead of, like, the devil that you don't know. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you have that situation there. I mean, personally, I would have liked to seen Ali Koç of the Koç family running for the election, but I don't think his family allows him to. When Yıldırım was in jail during the 2011-2012 season, I thought he did a great job, you know, running things for him. And, you know, I mean, he's definitely a humanitarian. I mean, you probably know about the Divan Hotel story where he sheltered the Gezi Park protesters. So it seems to me like he seems to be the best choice. But I think, like, out of the choices I would go with here, I'd probably go with Aziz Yıldırım because, you know, even though he might get banned, or there was always the possibility of him getting banned, but the Turkish Football Federation didn't ban him because I guess to them that there wasn't enough evidence to really convict him of match fixing or the attempt of match fixing either way. But I guess maybe, you know, the Fenerbahce Congress, I would think that it's probably the devil that they know and they know very well instead of the devil that they don't know, because I have been noticing, like, people who are supporting Aydınlar for the election, it seems to be very few Fenerbahçe fans and mostly fans of opposing teams. I mean, the whole thing surrounding Aziz Yıldırım, it just seems to me as though it's made people even more sympathetic within the Fenerbahçe community towards Aziz Yıldırım.
Yeah, I mean, no, interesting. I just, you didn't come out right away and say one way or the other, so I was kind of curious about that.
But yeah.
Do we know when we're going to find out? I guess this weekend,
yeah,
right?
I believe that the Congress is this weekend. This has probably been one of the more major things that has come out of Turkish football within the last couple years. I mean, I know Galatasaray had to have a chairman election, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't really so major. You know, Trabzonspor recently had a chairman election, putting in Ibrahim Hacı Osmanoğlu, and he actually went to the TFF earlier today as we were recording this, you know, trying to appeal for the 2010-2011 league championship, and I just thought, let it go, really. But back to Aziz Yıldırım, I just seem to think that the whole situation surrounding him in terms of the majority of the Fenerbahçe community, and, you know, I will admit I'm a fan of the club, but the way I'm looking at it is that whole situation has garnered more sympathy in, you know, that fandom for Aziz Yıldırım, because it seems as though that to the Fenerbahçe community, or at least the Fenerbahçe supporters, that Aydınlar seems more like a Trojan horse. You know what I mean? Aydınlar, I mean, to me, it's like, Aydınlar couldn't run the Turkish Football Federation very well. And, you know, as much as Yıldırım Demirören, who is the current chairman, gets a lot of criticism, I would have to say that he has done so far a way better job than Aydınlar's short reign when he was chairman. So to me, okay, you can run a healthcare business, and he's And he's the Mehmet Ali Aydınlar is the head of the Acıbadem healthcare group. You couldn't run the Turkish Football Federation. What makes him think he's going to run one of the biggest clubs in Turkey? You know, what makes him think he can run a sports club? Not just a football club, but a sports club. I mean, really?
Well, to be fair, they're much different things, I think. But you can, but I see what you're saying. You can kind of hope that he's good at a club by not impressing you with the federation. But I'll be following your Twitter closely this weekend to see if there are any any good outputs.
But I mean, if I'm looking at it right now, don't be surprised if Aziz Yıldırım wins. I wouldn't be surprised if Aziz Yıldırım wins, because it just seems as though, like, the main focus of Fenerbahçe fans, you know, what their main thoughts is, people have been out to get him since, like, the end of the 2010-2011 season. And, you know, I mean, you probably heard the podcast when we were covering it back then. But it just seems as though that, you know, out of this whole time of a case that put Fenerbahçe in the spotlight for alleged match-fixing, it actually has the opposite effect. You know, it might have taken them down, but it might have actually made them stronger and probably made Aziz Yıldırım a sympathetic figure in the eyes of many of the Fenerbahçe supporters. So that's my prerogative on that.
Gotcha.
All right. Do you want to take a break, or do you want to go straight ahead with Fatih Terim and his press conference, you know, breaking his silence for the first time since he was sacked as Galatasaray manager?
Let's dive right in.
So he did come out with a press conference, and he actually blasted Galatasaray chairman Ünal Aysal. That's Fatih Terim, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about. And this is going to be a pretty lengthy thing, but I did happen to, you know, really give some really good quotes here. So sit back, relax, take a chill pill, put your feet up, and let me read you some of the quotes from the press conference. So, quote, "People will have disagreements from time to time. If Chairman Aysal had a problem with me, we could have talked about it personally. Regardless, he sacked me, and I wished him the best, gathered my things, and left. There's been a lot of talk about Galatasaray culture, but a manager should never have to learn about his sacking from the press. I've never experienced something like this in my 40 years being affiliated with Galatasaray. This isn't the Galatasaray that I know. Hopefully no other manager, domestic or foreign, will experience what I went through. The whole thing with being called an employee, changes within the board, rumors of a new manager, salaries of players, a lesser man would have quit a long time ago. I said I wouldn't leave until Galatasaray sewed on a fourth star. That increased the severity of the situation. I gave my word to the Turkish Football Federation that I would coach the last four matches, and in reference to World Cup qualifying, I never said anything else except this. Reports that I had negotiated with the TFF back in April are completely false. They could show whatever proof they want, but this is completely false. During my time at Galatasaray, there were negotiations with several foreign coaches and offers were made. I found this out before the match against Antalyaspor via a phone call. I said after the Antalya match and at halftime of the Beşiktaş match that I wouldn't leave Galatasaray until they sewed on their fourth star. I have paid much attention to my ethical character during that time. I made sure not to leave Galatasaray in a damaged state. I told TFF Chairman Yıldırım Demirören that I wouldn't discuss anything unless he got permission from Ünal Aysal. Demirören called Aysal, got his permission, and we negotiated. There were several other TFF officials at the negotiations. There was an offer made. I told Demirören to get Aysal's permission, and I left the negotiations. I went to Aysal and said that I would not be paid for the job there, even though by law, the TFF is supposed to pay me for my services. I said donate the pay you would have given me to charity. I only did all this with Aysal's permission. He called Demirören in front of me, and they both agreed to me taking over the national team. Imagine this. Demirören calls Aysal and asks him for permission, and Aysal responds that, we'll let you have him in January. It seems to me that Aysal was sure he would let me go. I didn't do anything unethical or against decorum. Aysal had told me that the members of the board of directors were going to be changed but wanted to continue to work with me. We were going to discuss the subject of extending my contract after the General Congress, and that was a few months ago. It wasn't an issue until the league had started up. When the subject of the national team came up, then events started going into motion. Galatasaray published a statement on their official website that I had taken the national team job and then changed it. I think this was a coincidence. Regardless, the chairman gave his word. We didn't have to go through this. The board extended my contract at Galatasaray due to pressure from the community and fans. If Metin Oktay or Ali Samian found out what I had gone through, they would have been outraged. Regardless of what I had previously gone through, I said I wouldn't leave until a fourth star was put on the Galatasaray crest. With ISIL and former Galatasaray Vice Chairman Ali Duders present, I signed a 3-year contract in the afternoon. I told him of the day I had first joined the club. Or at least he told him the story of that. After I had signed the deal, within 24 hours, I was visited by a club official, and he said to me to have the deal changed to a deal where it would be a 1-year rolling contract in which it would roll over depending on my success. I haven't previously talked about this subject because I was tied to the ethics of Galatasaray. The board was looking for any excuse to get rid of me. Close quote. On the subject of whether he would ever return to the club, he responded, quote, I have taken pride in serving Galatasaray and I might return to the club one day. That's life. It could happen. Close quote. Now, no, he was speaking about his future and he said, quote, my goal now is to bring success to the Turkish national team. If there are those who are against me running this team, then I feel sorry for them on behalf of this country. I never would have been sacked if there wasn't an offer from the national team. I haven't spoken with Unai Aysel since my sacking from Galatasaray, close quote. And then there was one thing about him getting along with Wesley Sneijder. You know, there were rumors they were getting along. He said, quote, I told Sneijder what I thought about him to his face. There are times when we're not going to see eye to eye on things, but I never had a problem with him, close quote. So after me reading all that and my throat getting a little bit parched, let me get your thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sort of tempted to take all those quotes and just kind of sum them up. You know, basically, it sounds like he's saying, you know, I basically was totally reasonable the whole time, and the other people at Galatasaray were embarrassing and uncharacteristically unreasonable, etc., and mistreated. I mean, he sounds like a guy who feels pretty mistreated. This press conference was, you know, sort of a highly anticipated thing, where he'd sort of explain everything and himself. It didn't seem like he made any real pointed attacks, right? He kind of points out some of the, I guess, backstabbing, but it wasn't like, it didn't seem to take a real personal tone or a kind of like, you know, ad hominem kind of thing. He just kind of says how it was. I'd sort of wonder if there's going to be any kind of rebuttal to this.
You know, but if I may interrupt, I haven't seen any rebuttal, but, you know, just from what he's saying, it just seems as though it just makes me sympathetic towards the guy. I mean, it just seemed as though that it was a bad situation for him. And, you know, maybe he didn't deserve to be sacked. I mean, OK, Galatasaray were doing so well at the beginning of the season, but they hadn't lost a game until he left.
Yeah, but if they had already decided that they wanted to get rid of him, and then it seems like they kind of went about doing that sort of awkwardly, but there isn't an easy way to let the guy off the team, you know what I mean? It's to lose him. So I can kind of see it from there. If you consider that from the beginning they wanted to get rid of him, you know, and make a change, then you can kind of see. For me, it kind of explains a lot of this stuff, although they clearly didn't seem to go about it that professionally, at least according to Fatih Terim.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was nice that he cleared up the thing with Wesley Sneijder. You know, it's nice that he confirmed that he's definitely in it for the long haul with working for the Turkish national team. All right. You know, those were nice things to hear. He didn't badmouth Galatasaray as an organization. I thought his remarks about, you know, Ali Samian and so forth, Metin Oktay, I thought that was kind of over the top, but you sort of expect that kind of thing in a press conference sort of rant of sorts. He hasn't really said much about the situation until today, so. Nothing that he said really surprised me, honestly. I don't think there were any, like, real revelations. It just, you know, I think the biggest thing I take away from it was he didn't blast anybody. He stayed fairly positive for what I was expecting, and he changed the subject to the national team. I thought that was good. I don't know. Is the case closed now, Atta? Is this something that's going to go away now?
I don't know. It depends on whether maybe ISIL responds, but it just seemed as though, like, the only professional out of this whole thing was Fatih Terim. He basically said, hey, if you want me for the national team, go ask ISIL for his permission, which obviously he was supposed to do. You know, the TFF had to ask ISIL for permission to negotiate. And obviously, Galatasaray, if the TFF wanted to hire him, maybe they would give him some compensation. He said, for my TFF salary, you know, go donate it to charity or something, you know, which I thought was pretty nice of him to do, even though we talked about that Bodrum house painting thing ad nauseum. But I think the point is, It seems as though from what Tarim's saying, he's saying, hey, I went about things the professional way. I respect Galatasaray as a club. I respect the community. I respect their fans. I've been affiliated with this organization for 4 decades of my life. And I know, you know, the spirit of the club. I know about the ethics of the club. I know how to be a professional. And, I mean, him invoking, you know, Ali Samiyen, who's the founder of Galatasaray, and Metin Oktay, who is the legendary forward of Galatasaray. You know, every one of the big three has, like, their number one guy, the hallowed name that's always associated with the club. You know, Haki Yetan for Beşiktaş, Lefter Küçükhan Donyadis for Fenerbahçe, and Metin Oktay for Galatasaray. You know, him invoking those names, I mean, yeah, I guess maybe he wanted to drive the point home, but from what he's saying, it seems as though that he had a lot of problems with Unal Aysal that really resonated during the season, or at least this current season. Because, you know, last season, okay, Galatasaray won the championship, so, you know, winning cures everything, you know, that whole mantra. But it just seems as though that if Galatasaray wanted to replace Fatih Terim, why didn't they do it over the summertime? You know, why did they do it in the offseason? I mean, look, if Aysal had problems with Terim and, you know, he was going behind his back to negotiate with other guys, well, then that doesn't look professional. And I don't know. It just seems as though this is more on Aysal more than anything. It just seems as though, like, Terim has come off as saying, I took all the steps. I did things the ethical way. You know, I made sure to act as a professional in all this. That's what it comes off as.
Yeah, of course, looking back at it, the timing, these things tend to happen too late, right? And by these things, I mean any kind of managerial changes and that sort of thing. It's just, you don't get rid of a guy the moment you first think to. And yeah, they should have done it sooner if they were going to do it in the end. But, and of course, I think if they did it all over again, they wouldn't have come across looking so buffoonish. But for me, it's not really nothing super unexpected happened here. I thought Fatih Terim handled the press conference and what he said with some class. So I'll give him that. You know, you sounded impressed with what he had to say. I don't think there's a cancer eating at the core of Galatasaray either. I mean, I think it's just these situations are awkward, you know, and when you try to change management and stuff, and maybe you should have done it sooner or whatever, unless you handle it really, really professionally and things kind of work out, there's going to be a little bit of blowback. And in this case, it was kind of a shock to everybody and the timing was weird, but I don't know. Yeah. I'm sort of over it now. I hope, especially after this press conference, everyone else is too, you know?
Right. It just seems as though that Terim said, I was doing all the right things. He actually told the Turkish Football Federation, hey, look, go ask Aysal for his permission, okay? Because I'm under contract with this organization. So if I want to go to you, you know, you would have to call up my boss and say, hey, look, we have this vacancy. We believe he's the best candidate for the job, and we would like to have him join us and maybe try and attempt to get into the World Cup. And, you know, we discussed that he was probably the best candidate out there, and, you know, he would just split the time, at least for the next 4 games when he was hired. But I don't know. It just comes off as, you know, there's a lot more to this than what we see on the surface. But in terms of this press conference, and maybe we should try and bring this podcast to a close this week, it just seems as though that Terim has come off that, you know, as much as I've criticized him for having a short fuse, more of a motivator more than a tactician, at least from what I'm reading about this press conference and what he had to say, he seems like a professional. Now, okay, you might not want to paint your house blue in Bodrum, but it just seemed as though that he went about things the right way. He went about things the professional way. He said, look, I'm under contract to Galatasaray. I'm sort of interested, but you'd have to ask my boss first. And then eventually, you know, in case like the TFF wants to Terim on a permanent basis, then the TFF can pay Galatasaray compensation. And that would be that. But unfortunately,
right,
it didn't happen.
Well, his remarks, Yeah. And his remarks provide some reassurance that probably, you know, and I hope I don't eat my words, but probably there won't be a lot of drama at the Turkish national team, you know, under his leadership. At least I hope not. But at least that kind of says, oh, this guy isn't just like a ticking time bomb. You know, this was a one-off kind of issue with the people at Galatasaray. And it's, I think his words provide some reassurance that it's not, he's not going to be a problem at the national team. So,
all right, then. Let's wrap this up for this week. Jeremy, I want to wish you a happy Halloween.
Yeah, happy Halloween, Atta. Thanks a lot. I really enjoyed doing the podcast, as always.
And we would like to thank you for listening to Turkish Football Weekly this week. And we will see you all next time.